Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good snowy morning. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. The mayor put forth a progressive city budget yesterday. Today, critics are asking whether it's more progressive than practical. There is a large surplus, $3 billion, that public workers facing contract negotiations have their eyes on. We'll talk about that later. Plus, Derek Jeter is retiring. Call in later in the show with your thoughts on the Yankees captain and fan favorite. And what time is your child eating lunch at school? 40% of New York City public schools are starting lunch periods by 10:45 in the morning. We'll hear more on that. And on the media's Bob Garfield will be in, asking what it means when we say that's what America is all about. But first, we're going to begin with WNYC's Andrea Bernstein. And Andrea, let's talk about the crazy commute before we get into the meat of why you're here this morning, trying to get your kid off to school. This was one of the big stories of the morning. I got my biggest snow boots and my parka out. I headed out at 6 o'clock in the morning. What was your morning like in this snowy day?
It was every parent that I saw this morning, there was a look of disbelief. In my household, my son asked me, "What does it take to impeach a mayor, Mom?"
Oh.
Now, to be fair, he wasn't that big a fan of Michael Bloomberg's snow day policies either. But there was snow, obviously, falling heavily horizontal. So it was tough.
Well, I think part of being a child is to complain about the snow day policy, no matter who the mayor is. Schools are open, but UFT President Michael Mulgrew has said he thinks it was a mistake for schools to be open. Any thoughts as a mom and as a political reporter, not so much from the kids' perspective?
Well, my high schooler texted me that there were 7 people in her first class, and I think that's one of the things we'll be looking at is attendance today. How many people made it? How many teachers made it who might be coming from further than the 5 boroughs?
Yeah, and there's going to be a press conference on that later, and we'll keep an eye on that. And then let's talk, of course, about your coverage of 3 mayors, 4 governors, a few presidents, dozens of city council members. But perhaps, Andrea, no gift keeps on giving to an investigative journalist like the New York and New Jersey Port Authority by state agency charged with running the airports, bridges, tunnels, transportation, infrastructure projects. Let's talk about what's been happening with the golden, what we've been calling gate, the bridge gate, the Washington Bridgegate. So let's talk about David Sampson, and let's let everyone know who David Sampson is, related to the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie. Who is David Sampson, and why are we talking about him today?
Well, David Sampson is one of the most powerful people in New Jersey that you never heard of.
You're about to.
He is sort of probably first and foremost a very close confidant of Governor Chris Christie's. They met. David Sampson was the Attorney General of New Jersey. He was actually appointed by Jim McGreevy, a Democrat, but he was the Attorney General when Chris Christie was the U.S. Attorney. And Chris Christie has joked that they became friends because the Latin King gang had a death threat out on both of them. And he said, "Nothing brings you together like a death threat." So they became personally close. David Sampson became the chair of Governor Christie's transition team. He worked on the campaign, and now he's very involved in his political efforts. For example, he was one of a very few people who traveled with Governor Chris Christie when he assumed the chairmanship of the Republican Governors Association. He is also the chair of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, an agency with a multi-billion-dollar budget, larger than most states. And simultaneously, he's running a very successful law firm in New Jersey. It's long been very successful. But one of the things that we've been documenting is that after Christie was elected and after he became chair of the Port Authority, his business got even
better. Wolf and Samson, and that's what we want to talk about. I never heard that Latin King story. That's an amazing tidbit of trivia. So let's talk a little bit more about Port Authority, Wolf and Samson, and how this story evolves related to David Samson. You say he was appointed by Christie. Their relationship runs long and deep. He's the Port Authority board chairman. Is that similar to being a board chair for, say, a place like WNYC or any other organization? What does it actually mean? You go to some board meetings. Do you make any high-level strategic decisions, or do you just have a nice title? It's not a full-paying job, right?
No. It's not a full-time job, and the Port Authority has 12 commissioners. All of them have outside employment. There's a couple of things that are different about David Samson. One is that a number of people who are present or former employees of the Port Authority have told me that David Samson interpreted his role differently from previous chairs.
How so?
So he came in and he stated publicly and clearly, my goal is to get the most I can for the state of New Jersey. Now, and Chris Christie has said, he's defended this. He said, well, of course, we're here to fight for the interests of our constituents. However, the Port Authority is constructed the way it is because it's supposed to be a bi-state agency,
yes,
insulated from politics, that the people on it are supposed to be making decisions that are in the best interest of the entire Port District, which includes both New York and New Jersey. So there's that. And then he, by all accounts, is a very muscular chairman. So he came in and he was examining deals and he was directing staff and he was asking questions about things. So he was much more hands-on than some of the previous chairmen of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey have been. Now, there are people who would say this is a good thing, except that one of the things that we've been finding out is that he, in several instances, was working on deals inside the Port Authority in his capacity as chair, while at the same time his private law firm had a business interest. And a lot of watchdogs have said this raises questions about conflict. Why is it that his personal business should be rising with the business of the Port Authority?
And I want to come back to this potential conflict of interest in a moment, but let's talk a little bit more about that muscularity you just referred to. You focused on one particular deal in some of your reporting for a new airport in Atlantic City that the Port Authority took over about a year ago, I think. Atlantic City is far outside the 25-mile radius from the Statue of Liberty that defines the Port Authority's scope of operation. So why did the Port Authority get involved at all?
Well,
is that part of his
what happened
mission?
Was is that there New York officials under the administration of Governor Eliot Spitzer, former Governor Eliot Spitzer, want to take over the Stewart Airport in Newburgh, which is up the Hudson. And they made the argument that to some people living in Orange County, Rockland County, northern New Jersey, that area, that airport was actually closer than JFK or LaGuardia. They also made the argument that there could be some relief for cargo deliveries. So they said, okay, we're going to get that. So Governor Corzine, then the governor of New Jersey, said, okay, well, then we're going to put in a statute that will enable us, if we want to, at some time, to take over an airport in New Jersey. So that is put into law. It lies dormant. A few years later, and I should mention there's also a political context to this, that this airport was very important to South Jersey Democrats. They saw it as part of the revitalization of Atlantic City and something that would help bring more business, more tourists to the area, which, as we all know, has been struggling. Chris Christie embraced that. He said, when he ran for governor, he said, I am going to work on the economy of Atlantic City. Now, at the same time that that was happening, his appointees in the Port Authority. So, you know, one of the things about David Samson that I should say is that his name shows up in the Bridgegate, documents. There's a sort of now famous quote from David Wildstein, who, as we all know, is the Christie appointee who orchestrated the whole thing, saying, Samson helping us to retaliate. This is when New York reopened the lanes and cleared up the traffic jam. We don't know what that means. And I think when that happened, a lot of people were like, Samson, who? Wait, I've got to keep straight. The name's Wildstein, Baroni. These are people I never knew. Who is this other guy? I don't know. But one of the things that's been emerging in all of this is that, in fact, he was close to Wildstein and Baroni, and that a number of sources have told me that in the case of the Atlantic City Airport, he told them, get to work. We want to get this deal done. A lot of aviation experts were saying, what? Like, why do we want Atlantic City? It's got 29 flights a day. It's losing money. The Port Authority already can't take care of LaGuardia. It can't take care of Kennedy. Why does it want to take on this additional responsibility? But what a number of people have told me is that Samson took it very seriously and made sure that it did happen. And it did happen.
All right. So let's talk then about what you alluded to earlier, the law firm, and how it had been hired as bond counsel by the agency that runs the airport. What does that mean? What kind of work were they doing? How does the money get made? Is the law firm collecting fees, doing these contracts? And is there evidence of some sort of conflict of interest?
Right. Well, this is the thing that sent a lot of eyebrows shooting to the ceiling, is that I have been examining all of Wolf and Sampson's business deals. And one of the reasons that I've been doing this is because not in Bridgegate, but in the other scandal swirling around the Christie administration, which is involving the Hoboken land deal, in which the mayor of Hoboken says that the lieutenant governor, Kim Guadagno, said, if you don't green light this project, you're going to have trouble with your Sandy aid.
That came to light after Bridgegate.
That came to light after. That project was a Wolf and Sampson client. And after that, I've been looking at this, a number of other reporters have been looking at this, at his business dealings. So I went and looked at the records that are on file with this obscure agency in Trenton, the New Jersey Election Law Enforcement Commission, and it has all of their business things. And one of them was the South Jersey Transportation Authority, and I'd never heard of that. I wondered what it was, and so I did some digging, and I found out it was actually running the Atlantic City Airport. So what that meant is, at the same time, in his capacity, the public position of chair of Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, he was pushing this deal. His private law firm was working for the other side.
But did Samson and the law firm, did that deal, that contract deal, get signed before he was appointed to the Port Authority?
Almost simultaneously. It was right around the time that he was getting nominated to be Port Authority chief. He was also getting this business deal done. So they were happening, I think it was within a month.
All right.
One happened of the other.
Well, then let me ask a different related question. Did Samson recuse himself from the vote on the deal?
Well, he did recuse himself from the deal. So that means he abided by the letter of the Port Authority law. However, what a number of people have told me is that he was the one who made it happen. He was the driving force behind getting it done. And in fact, and you can hear this in the tape of the radio story that I did on this, when after they vote, he comes out and he says, well, we authorized this and we voted. So not only did he put it together, according to all the sources that I talked to, but he spoke about it publicly with a lot of ownership, basically saying, I supported this. And, you know, at some point, this becomes telegraphed to the other commissioners. I'm behind this. So he formally didn't vote, but he publicly said, I'm backing it.
Put his imprimatur on it. Now, the airport deal gained about $113,000 for the firm, Wolf and Sampson. Let's talk about some of the other transportation deals that the Port Authority took on that benefited his firm, Wolf and Sampson. There was a 2010 deal with New Jersey Transit for, if I'm reading this right, $1.5 million.
Right. This deal is still a mystery. This deal was for an unspecified public-private partnership. And one of the reasons that this caught my notice is because New Jersey Transit and the Port Authority have a lot of financial ties. I mean, just one very obvious one is the bus terminal that the Port Authority, it's called, where New Jersey Transit right. brings all its buses. They get very cheap rent for their bus docks there. There have also been a number of cases over the years where the Port Authority has been funding directly New Jersey Transit trains. And one of the other things that I uncovered, and I realize sometimes it's just so hard to keep all of this in your head, but
that's why we have you.
I mentioned that David Sampson was with Governor Christie when he was fundraising for the Republican Governors Association. And one of the things that we now know from looking at their fundraising records is quite a bit of money has come into the Republican Governors Association from companies that do business with New Jersey Transit and or the Port Authority.
When I was a child, I thought the Port Authority was only that bus terminal. And boy, was I wrong. Now we understand it to be so much bigger and now so much involved.
So powerful.
In all of,
right.
So powerful.
And that's
and
the
all
thing about all of this, is that it's an incredibly powerful sort of behind-the-scenes agency. But this is why the person who is sitting atop it has so much power, and why his close relationship with Governor Christie, given what we now know about how politicized the Port Authority was, is coming under scrutiny.
Sampson voted for a massive upgrade to the Harrison Path station at the same time he was representing landowners nearby who would have benefited greatly. Is that right?
This is another case where it looks like the appearance is that he had his fingers in pies on two sides of the deal. So he actually did vote this time. He didn't recuse himself. It was a $256 million upgrade of the Harrison Path station. And I should say that most planning experts that I've spoken to, transportation experts, they like that upgrade because they feel like it is a potentially dense development, transit rich. People can get in and out of Newark, in and out of New York City by the train. It's a good idea. So it's not the development that people are criticizing. What they're saying is that his private law firm was representing people that owned land nearby. And when you put in a transit station, what happens is all the land around it becomes so much more valuable because people want to live there because it's so much easier to get in and out. So that's where eyebrows have been raised in that case.
And listeners should know that we do have a graphic on our website that shows the amount of lobbying work that flowed to Wolf and Sampson after Christie took office. There are other deals that we aren't even getting to because time doesn't allow. But you can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. So what kind of measures, Andrea, are in place to structure the decisions about who should get this type of business? Are there Port Authority rules about some sort of open bidding process or maybe a public review?
Right. Well, I should say that, you know, I mean, one of the things that people have come up and said to me and talked to me a lot since I've been working on this story, they've been saying, well, isn't it always been terrible at the Port Authority mm-hmm. where the commissioners have had business interests? And the answer is, it's always been pretty bad. Yes, commissioners tend to work in real estate. They work in transportation. Things that they do could help them. But what's different here is you have Mr. Sampson's closeness to Governor Chris Christie. You have his aggressive work as a lawyer. And, you know, the New Jersey Business Journal once put Sampson as one of the top 50 lawyers in New Jersey. And they said clients like him because of his access to the governor. So there's a sense that he's somehow using this powerful position, perhaps, to advance his own business interests in a way that is not solely what it should be, watchdogs say, which is serving the public and carrying out the best interests of the tax-paying and toll-paying public. That's how the Port Authority is funded.
But that suggests there are 49 other lawyers in New Jersey. I mean, you would think that David Sampson is the only lawyer in New Jersey.
Well, sometimes his name seems to pop up in so many of these deals that it's beginning to look like he is certainly the lawyer of choice for people who have business that might involve the state because his law firm has been up until the point where it's gotten all this scrutiny, been able to get things done. So people who own property, people who want to do things, hire their law firm because they see them as effective.
Well, then let's ask that question. Let's sort of flip the dialogue on its head a little bit. Why wouldn't the head of a law firm that has a long track record in real estate or administering complicated transportation deals and close ties with the authority agencies that run transportation, why not have the head of that law firm be the perfect choice to take on the Port Authority or lead the Port Authority or take on the work of the Port Authority? I mean, this seems
right.
like the perfect marriage.
What the watchdogs say is that if you are a sort of low-level employee of the state of New Jersey, you're not allowed to also work for another branch of the state of New Jersey, so that there appear to be a different set of rules that are applying here. And also, you know, if you look at the graphic that you mentioned, his private interests are going up at the same time that he takes on this public position. So there's an appearance that somehow he's getting something that wouldn't be available to everybody else. And, you know, I just want to say the reason that this is so important is because of what we've learned about Bridgegate, which is that the Port Authority in so many ways became another arm and in some ways a political arm of the Christie administration. So if that's the case, the watchdogs are saying is there should be even greater care about potential conflicts and about doing this, because the Port Authority's mandate is to run the airports, run the bridges, improve port commerce.
And to be an independent agency.
And to make all of our fortunes rise. So what's happening now is not just typical Port Authority, garden variety, government kind of ickiness. It appears to be a more aggressive form of that.
And following up on that, and just to underscore for our listeners, as I'm sure they know, but to point them back to some of the work you've done, because as you said, they can go back and listen to these reports. You and Matt Katz and Sarah Gonzalez have done a great job showing how the Port Authority became a real tool for the Christie administration in wielding power. But let's come back to the other side of the Port Authority, New York.
Right, New York.
Where was New York in all of this?
Where was New York?
It is a bi-state agency, as you said at the top of our conversation. Why haven't the Cuomo people asserted their power on the other end of it?
Well, this is a lingering mystery. And what state officials have said to me is, look, it was our guy, meaning Pat Foy. I mean, one of the very confusing things about the Port Authority is that there's a New York staff and a New Jersey staff, even though it's supposed to be one agency. But the executive director is traditionally appointed by the New York governor. And what the New York side has said is, look, our guy, Pat Foy, was the one who blew the whistle on this scheme. He stopped the lane closures. He brought the potential irregularities and illegalities to everybody's attention. And that's true. That happened. But what we don't know, and what we still haven't gotten a satisfactory answer from Governor Cuomo, is why wasn't there more aggressive contact between Pat Foy and Governor Cuomo's office, and why didn't Governor Cuomo do more to end the politicization of the Port Authority, which, as we now know, was going on? And they've said there's an investigation, we can't really talk about it, but that's one of the things I think a lot of us want to understand, is there were two heads of the Port Authority, Governor Christie and Governor Cuomo. Well, a lot of scrutiny has been put on Governor Christie and what he did or did not know and when, and what he did or did not do and when. We don't know when exactly Governor Cuomo learned about it, and we don't know what exactly he did and why he wasn't apparently more aggressive in putting a stop to the political uses that the Port Authority was put by the New Jersey side.
Before we run out of time, I want to come back to one thing you mentioned earlier and sort of follow up, and that is Port Authority over time. Is it an inherently corrupt institution? Has it always been this way? How does this moment in time compare to other moments in time? And I'm thinking specifically of the World Trade Center and that redevelopment scheme, full of inefficiency, political patronage, or any other moment in time you want to pick. How do you see this in the context of the larger institution?
So I've been covering the Port Authority for about two decades.
Which is why I'm asking you this
maybe
question.
Maybe there have been something like 10 governors in that time on both sides, New York and New Jersey. And there have always been questions raised about the politics that go on there and why we don't understand it and how it can be like this. But I think that one of the things that's really important to understand is Christie came in 2009, a full year before Cuomo, and has been reported in the Record newspaper and elsewhere, flooded the agency with patronage employees with political ties who, like Sampson, saw their role as doing the bidding of the governor. And he sort of used it as a branch of his government. It solved political problems. It solved policy problems. And so it is a Cuomo didn't come in for another year, and then he had the sort of World Trade attacks 10th anniversary to worry about. So he sort of didn't. Christie had quite a running start on the agency. Mm-hmm. One of the people that I described, who was a former Port Authority employee, said to me that the Christie people just came in like cockroaches. That was his language. So they were really sort of taking over the authority in a very aggressive way. So there was a kind of a power imbalance, and they were able to do more. So while we've always seen kind of horse trading, unclarity, non-transparency, what we are seeing from these Bridgegate documents looks like it's all of that, but on steroids.
Mm, wow. And so what do you think, briefly, Andrea, comes next?
Well, there's a whole lot more to learn. I mean, everything we know from just five subpoenas, and there are now dozens more subpoenas out there of people in the Port Authority, people in the Christie administration. So there's a whole lot more to understand about Bridgegate, and in particular, David Sampson's role. We know that he was close to Wildstein and Barone. What we would like to know more about is how much he knew about what they were doing, about this particular scheme, what, if anything, he told the governor. Because remember, he is super close to Governor Christie. And when Governor Christie fired four of his, or he let two resign and he fired two, he defended David Sampson. He said he didn't know anything about Bridgegate. He's upset about it. I've asked the New Jersey governor's office, do you still feel that way about him, given all the other things that have come out? But I think that is one of the things we're going to be looking for in these documents, is how involved was Sampson, and what does that tell us about his very close friend, Governor Chris Christie?
You are going to be a very busy woman in the coming weeks, months, and possibly years. Thank you so much, Andrea Bernstein is WNYC editor for Politics and Policy. I appreciate your coming in.
Thank you.
Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. After the break, a look at Bill de Blasio's first budget and the clues that lie in it about how he's going to fund his big fiscal priorities. We'll be back in a minute.